I don't even know how to go about spoiling this book. I'm like, where do you start?
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this episode number 134, we are discussing. Hopefully we've already read and we are now discussing Piranesi by Susanna Clarke, which was the winner of our Battle of the Books? Is that what we call it?
Battle of the Books.
Yeah.
So this is your fault, listeners.
Yes.
You chose this, most of you.
Some of you.
Some of you.
If you didn't vote, it's your fault.
It was only by one vote, so.
Yeah, it was close.
My name is RJ. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, BC, which is located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh and Stolo people.
My name is Anna. I'm a librarian in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA.
My name is Matthew. I'm also a librarian currently in Las Vegas, Nevada, USA.
And Las Vegas is located on the traditional homelands of the Nuuvi Southern Paiute people, including the Las Vegas Paiute tribe and the Moapa Band of Paiutes.
My name is Megan. I'm an archivist in the National Capital Region of Canada, which is the unceded traditional territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe.
And for more information on our land acknowledgements, you can go to our website at bookclub4m.com. Before we dive into Piranesi itself, our discussion about that, our announcements. Number one, we have made another retrospective book list of books by people of color, by authors of color, in a specific genre that we covered in the early days of the podcast before we made these book lists. And so this month's retrospective book list is self-help books. By authors of color.
Help.
Self-help books. Not that. So you can find that on our website or in the show notes to this episode. Announcement number two is we did a transcript of our last episode, our episode about flash fiction. So if you go to our website or the show notes for the previous episode, you should be able to find a link to a Google Doc that contains a full transcript of the episode. If you find that interesting, take a look. If you have suggestions for how we can make a transcript more accessible, please let us know about that as well. It is our first time doing one for the show. It took us a lot of effort and time to do it. If you would like us to keep making them, please let us know. And if you have tips or advice on how to do it, please let us know about that as well. And finally, we launched a bookshop.org storefront page. Bookshop.org is a site that is hoping to support bookshops and not Amazon. But also, influencers can set up their own storefronts and things like influencers, which I guess is where we fall.
Yeah, I was going to say.
So currently, there's only one book in our bookshop, which is Piranesi by Susanna Clarke. And so if you haven't read the book yet, you can go to that shop, and there'll be a link in the show notes to that, and you buy it, and we will get a small percentage of the money, which we will put towards things like hosting costs or potentially transcript cost as well. I think that covers everything?
Yeah.
That's all the announcements.
It's been a while since we've had so many.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I always feel like we have a bunch.
I don't know. Okay. Piranesi, Susanna Clarke, came out last year. Susanna Clarke, for those unfamiliar with her as an author, has written one novel before this, which was Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, which was a tome of a book. I can't remember exactly how long it is, but it's hundreds and hundreds. It's very long, about magic coming back to the world and various magicians in, is it 18th or 19th century England?
I did not read it.
Nobody can remember. It's kind of a pastiche of books from that time period, but also I think there's a lot of like kind of academic references in it. But it's very good. I really enjoyed it. And there was a TV show made out of it as well that I've heard some good things about. And I've remembered the fourth announcement. There is a fourth announcement Announcement number four is I was on another podcast this past week.
Nice.
It is called, I can't remember the name of it. I'll edit that in later. It was a last minute thing, so I didn't realize until like an hour before that I was going to be on this podcast. It was done by a library. And so you can listen to me talk about some books on that one if you want to check it out. There'll be a link in the show notes. There's also a video. There's a video for it. It was live streamed through video as well. So you can look at me talking and drinking tea, I guess. So Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell was very good, but then the author did not publish another book for a very long time. And she was working on Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell for like a decade, I believe, before it finally came out. There's a book of short stories set in the same world that came out as well. And I did not realize, I'd heard that there was an illness or health problems involved with it, but I didn't know what it was until I looked it up for this podcast, this episode, which was that, she has chronic fatigue syndrome. And so find it very hard to write. And she'd been working on a sequel to Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, but was like, you know what? Too many characters. Too much work. And so decided to write this book instead, which is like what? Like characters?
I think it's a spoiler to specify how many characters there are.
Oh, okay. I guess we're in spoilers. Okay. I will edit that out. Which has a much more limited set of characters.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And is shorter overall.
Did we properly clarify what this episode is?
You mean, did we specify that once a year we decide to all read the same book because the rest of our book club is us reading different books? And so one time a year we all read the same book and this is our third?
Fourth. This is the fourth time we've done it.
Okay.
Usually we read a different genre every month and discuss books in that genre. And we've done everything from self-help to cyberpunk. So a very broad swathe of things. Once a year we read the same book. There's links in the show notes to the previous times we've done this. And this year's Piranesi. Someone else talk, please.
Yeah, listeners voted and they chose Piranesi. It was Matthew's pick in the Battle of the Books. And hopefully one that he enjoyed.
Yes, we all suggested a book and then listeners voted on it.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Listeners chose this by only one vote, but choose it they did. And should we get into talking about what the book is about? Or does anyone have any other like background or information about the book that's not related to the plot?
Is RJ the only person who has not read anything by Susanna Clarke before?
I have started Susanna Clarke's other book before, but I have never finished it.
Mm-hmm. It's 1,000 pages.
Yeah.
When I was about, probably 16 or 17, maybe a little older. I don't know. But I was still a very young adult. And my aunt loaned me that book for like 3 or 4 years. And I did not get around to reading it, probably because it is 1,000 pages long, and I would just look at it and be like, no, not today.
That's because that's not a one day. It's like, no, not today, and for the next month.
However, this book, much shorter, and I read it in one day.
I did. I read the whole thing in one day, which actually was very interesting for me. It made me have a realization of how often for this book club I am reading things that I have no interest in reading.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
For once, I was actually interested in reading this and I enjoyed it. And so I genuinely sat down and read it in a day.
It took me 2 days.
You mean you can read for fun?
What?
This one really felt so easy. And I was like, so pleased with myself after I finished. I was like, oh, I got that done like so early.
Yes.
But yeah, that's what happens when you read books for enjoyment.
Yep.
I'm sorry that this podcast has ruined reading for all of us.
Yeah. This is so funny because this is like, we're all about talking about like different types of, you know, books, different genres of all different kinds that appeal to different people for different reasons. And there's a lot of like, I mean, it's all about the appeal for people of different types of books. And yet we're constantly reading things that don't appeal to us. It's like the fact
foundation of what we're doing. So I feel like it is the most distorted way to go about doing that.
Yeah. I also feel like there's probably a lot of books that we like doing genres the way that we do, that we sort of rule out for ourselves.
Yes.
Like this book, I don't know. I can't imagine which genre, like from our big list of genres, I would think, oh yeah, this is a good book for that genre.
Oh yeah.
Is haunted house a genre?
Maybe, yeah. Spooky house books. I guess if we have just like general fantasy, that is like broad enough that this would come up. But then it's like there are so many other books that are possible for that I don't know that I would land on this one.
Yeah, that's a really good thing. I don't know what I would if I would have ever read this book for the podcast without this specific episode.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should try and do that more often when we pitch books.
Yeah, I was just thinking that's a good thing to have in mind for next year when we're picking our book battle books, is which ones would not get are not genre clear.
I like that.
Is it time to go into spoiler territory, or do we give a brief plot description before we go into spoilers?
Yeah, let's try to give a spoiler-free brief summary, and then get into more details, because I think this is a book that is hard to talk about without getting into spoilers. But I also went in with very, very, like, with no spoilers and with very little information in general, just like that Matthew said it was about a big spooky house with a bunch of statues in it.
Yep.
And I was like, cool, great. And that was a great experience. I recommend it. It's been so long since I've done that.
I also wish that I had been able to do that. When I had to do research to pitch the book for this podcast.
Oh, right.
I spoiled multiple things for myself from reading reviews.
Oh, no.
Which was kind of upsetting. So it is also epistolary. So it's told as a series of journal entries.
Mm-hmm.
I think is the other thing that I can note. It's a spooky house. There's one main character who lives in the house. It goes on forever.
The house, not the book.
Yes, the book is very short.
The book is very short. The house is infinite.
Or seemingly infinite, at least.
Yeah.
And I feel that's about all we could say without spoiling stuff.
Yeah, I guess I wanted to say something that was sort of spoiler light before we get into like heavy spoilers, because I wanted to note that sometimes I think even just saying like, oh, there's so much to spoil, is itself like a spoil. Like if you go into something, it's sort of a different experience knowing there's a twist coming than like not knowing. That you should brace for something big to be revealed. But I think in this case, like, if you are a critical reader, like, at all, I think you know that something is amiss almost immediately, like, from the first journal entry, because there's this big spooky house, and it's all that exists, and all that has ever existed, and it's, you know, seemingly infinitely large, and also, we have our protagonist, and then there's one other person called the Other, who he sometimes sees and talks to. And he knows there's been a total of 15 people in the house, and there's just those 15 people. The rest of them are dead. It's just those two, and they're the only people in this infinitely large house. So right away in the first journal entry, I was like, okay, so where did he learn to read and write? How does he know some of these words that have no referent in this big house?
Yeah. I was actually going to say we could describe small bits about the house itself that are spoiler free.
True.
Because I think the house is such an important character, and you can say things like the house has statues all through it, that the character relates a lot about and it's made up of just like giant halls that are filled with statues, and then like what he calls vestibules. Boy, that's a hard word to say.
It's not exactly a house like you would live in. It's like a stately manor or something in England. It's like a museum.
Yeah, you know? It's not even like that, because it's not really set up as like a it's not set up clearly for human habitation to a degree. Like it's
if you've gone to some of these places though, and you just walk from room to room, which has like what are the things on the top of, you know, the walls and ceilings where they connect to each other?
Stalactites? Stalagmites?
No, no, what? No, no. What that's in you? Caves.
What are you
talking? Architecture things. You know, in fancy house, in fancy
columns?
No, not columns. The bits were like the
wow.
We're like, the wall connects to the roof and there's fancy looking stuff. Cornices?
Oh, God. What are those called? Oh, boy. I know what you mean. I know what you're talking about now. I don't know what those are called.
Moldings?
Moldings.
Okay, but the house is like not in human scope. Like, it's not...
Scale.
Scale. Yes, thank you. It's not in the proper scale for like humans walking around in it. And the bottom floors are flooded, and the upper floors are kind of in clouds, and then there's a middle floor with that sometimes gets flooded by tides, but otherwise is like sort of dry and habitable.
Has anyone read The Starless Sea by Aaron Morgenstern?
No.
Okay, this isn't a helpful analogy, but part of the book centers around a...
Spoiler warning. Avertissement de spoiler. Advertencia de spoiler.
Part of the book centers around also a portal world. That's a spoiler. Anyway.
I think we're into the spoiler territory. Yeah, cornices. It's decorative molding.
Yes.
Here we molding. Go.
Okay.
So, portal world to a space that has lots of levels and areas, and it's kind of like... A normal house has boundaries. This house does not have boundaries in the same sort of way. Like, I don't think Piranesi ever reaches a boundary, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, other than where things have, like, collapsed and stuff. But that's not because, like, the house is bounded. It's more just because, like, it's falling apart in places.
Now, I would say that... Okay, are we definitely going into deeper spoilers now?
Okay.
I think we should probably edit in like some kind of spoiler siren before what Megan said, and now it's spoiler town.
Okay. RJ, you will regret suggesting a siren, but
I knew what I was doing. Come on.
I think we cannot say if there are boundaries because the main character, the Piranesi character. I don't think they have a name for themselves, doesn't try to find them.
But they explore continuously.
They explore, but they always come back to where they start. I think one of the things that they talk about in the book is that they've only gone at most 960 rooms in one direction.
Hmm.
There's windows, and they've never tried to go out a window as far as I can tell.
Hmm.
Yeah, and he refers to like the very far halls, so like places that he hasn't explored, and I got the impression that he doesn't explore that far because he like has this survival routine set up where he needs to like, you know, be here to catch fish and you know, dry out seaweed in order to make nets and whatever.
I would say it also relates to the one other person that he knows exists.
Yes.
So he talks about having to meet with this person on a regular basis, and therefore, like, you have to be close enough to do that. And also, I just think that, like, as you're reading, I think a big part of the point and the meaning of this story is about the need for that connection and the need to find mm-hmm. other people within this space.
Mm-hmm. And the people that he does know about, the skeletons, the dead people, he feels like he has to look after them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And so he's not going, he doesn't want to leave them alone, I think, is something that ties into that as well.
Because so, I think we've all had the fantasy of like, you know, the building that goes on forever. And we just imagine we would keep walking and walking and walking through it and going farther and farther yep. and farther in whatever direction we chose to go in. But that is not how this person treats this space.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not really explained why. Like, explicitly, the character never says why they don't go further.
I think they seem to be a person who has survived based on routines to a large extent.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's an epistolary novel. He's writing diary entries, and it keeps him kind of on track as much as the other complains that, you know, he doesn't necessarily show up on time.
And by on time, you mean forgets that what day of the week it is?
Right. Like, he can't even remember who he is, never mind how much time has passed, so.
Yes. So that's, so we're into spoiler territory now, but I think we should maybe give more sort of structured details of the plot before we discuss further. So, So there is our protagonist who is called Pyr Nessy, but that's not a name that necessarily he claims for himself. And I was trying to remember if in the end he gives himself a name, but he's a beloved child of the house. I think that might be what he calls himself.
Mm-hmm. That's how he describes himself.
And as far as he knows, he's always lived in this house. And it's just him and this one other person who he calls the other. And the other, like, has little tasks for him, and they do, like, research together to try to, like, discover the secrets of the house. And then at one point, the other tells Pyr Nessy that a new person may be arriving soon, a 16th person, who they call 16 for most of the book. And with the threat of this new person arriving, some of these, the mysteries, not of the house, but of, like, who Pyr Nessy is and how he and the other got here, start to come into focus. And I think the author is dropping hints pretty early that our protagonist doesn't remember that, you know, as far as he's concerned, he's always lived here, because he doesn't remember his life much further back than a couple of years. And is dropping hints also that, like, there, this might not be a purely fantasy world, that there might be some connection to our, like, the real world. I remember there was a part where Pyr Nessy is cleaning up crisp bags. And he knows what crisp bags are, and that they used to have crisps in them, and what crisps are. And he, like, laments that one of the other 13 people who are dead must have eaten all of these and was not very tidy. But does not, like, you know, there make the connection that, like, where did, there's no crisp factory in the house. Like, where did these crisp bags come from?
That we know of.
Right, yeah.
Well, but even well before that, like in one of the very first couple of chapters or sections in here, he lists all of his journals.
Mm-hmm.
And the earliest journals are labeled with our structure of years of, like, 2011 or something like that. And then the later journals are all with his made up fantastical structures of years that relate to, like, things, events that happened within that year. So, I mean, even from there, like, that's really early on. So you're not kept in suspense that, like, there is clearly a connection to our world. Somehow, it's just not clear where that connection precisely is coming from.
Yeah.
And what this world is, it's like kind of like, I don't know if it's a pocket dimension, but it's like another dimension where I think they said, like, the ideas that leak out of our world end up.
Mm-hmm.
And that some people can go back and forth between these two worlds. And so the main character is originally from Earth, has ended up in this other dimension, has lost their memory.
But that's a pretty late reveal. About why it is.
Yes, yes. But we're in the spoiler territory.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
Yes. I do think, I feel like this is so well done, because I sometimes when I'm reading, I feel like when I'm reading something that has some sort of mystery and I have a lot more information than the protagonist does and they are not figuring it out, that can feel very frustrating to me as a reader, but I didn't feel that at all at this one.
Yeah.
The reader has so much more information than the protagonist does very soon, but, like, because it's related to memory loss, there's not that feeling of, like, gosh, just get it together. and also, like, even with all the information the reader has, there's still, like, all of these questions about, like, okay, but how did they get here? And, you know, obviously it becomes clear at a certain point that the other, like, just has sleeping bags and, you know,
shoes,
electronics, and yeah.
And a cell phone.
Yeah, even just the description of his clothes each time and how immaculate and how they change each time they meet. And I'm like, yeah, excuse me.
It's clear that he's moving back and forth, and it's like, okay, who is he and why is he doing this? And, like, did he find Pyr Nessy? Like, what happened?
Yeah.
All of that is still, there's still enough, like, tension and mystery there that I didn't feel, like, frustrated. And I think also it helps that, like, the protagonist is just so, like, good-hearted.
Yeah.
And sweet and, like,
so amenable and, like,
so, like, optimistic and happy about everything.
Yes, just, like, such a like positive outlook in you know, a truly, I mean, from the outside, like a truly dire and awful situation that he's in. But he, since he like doesn't remember doing anything else, is just so kind and patient and full of wonder and is just, you know, so delightful to spend time with and see things through that perspective, even when you're kind of, you know, very worried for this protagonist that like clearly something's going on and he doesn't know what it is.
Yeah. Matthew, do you want to bring up like how you described this book to me? Because Matthew finished it since we have one copy, so we each had to take turns reading it. So he read it first. And so how did you describe it?
A horror story?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And so then I read it and I was like, wow, I would totally not have described it as a horror, but I think it's so fascinating how we experienced it the same in different ways at the same time. Like
the idea of being trapped and losing my sense of self is what made this a horror story to me.
Mm.
And I can definitely understand how people wouldn't feel that way, but like, there were just elements of that. And it was like, there was a lot of suspense. Like what is going to happen next? Who is the other? What is the like position of power that he has over our protagonist? Our bad thing is going to happen to our protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
So a sense of dread kind of filled me through a lot of it. And then at the end, even I had the sense of dread. I'm like, oh, is he going to leave? Is he going to come back to Earth or not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I was afraid he was going to stay in this other world because he didn't know that there was anything else out there and he didn't know what there could be. So that also like created a sense of dread in me. I just think I'm just an anxious person.
No, I think that makes sense. Yeah. I ended up recommending this book to a friend, right after I finished reading it. Like I texted a friend. I was like, hey, you would like this. And he ended up reading it because it's fast read, so there's been enough time between when I finished it a few weeks ago and now that he read it, and he did like it, but he like looked into it and he's like, is it really dark? Like it looks like it could be. And I was like, well, it's I guess it's a little tense. Yeah, it's I don't remember how exactly I described it. Maybe a little I definitely said tense. And I definitely said, let me look.
I think it's like not just the memory loss. It's the sense of just loss of self.
Mm-hmm.
Like the main character is not who they used to be and seems to have very little connection with who they used to be. And so like this loss of self, like this replacement of personality is something that distresses me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Foreboding was the other word I used.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I will admit one thing I did, and this is very common for me. This is a admission of like what being a bad reader.
Did you skip forward?
I did.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So at some point or another, I was like, this is making me anxious and I just want to know. You know, at some point I'm like, I know he's in another world or dimension or something. And there is our Earth out there somewhere to some degree. Does he go back at the very end? And so I just went back just enough to figure out whether or not he did. I couldn't figure out how or what was going on or who he was talking to or what anything was going on at that point. But I'm like, yeah, okay. So he does to some degree. I can't tell if it's like a good thing or a bad thing or what's going on. But he does, and he's still there. He hasn't, like, died or been destroyed or something right, like that. Like, nothing terrible has happened to him. He doesn't
nothing else terrible.
Else terrible, yes. So I was like, okay, that's fine. That's all I needed. And then I think for me that took a lot of, like, that base level tension out of it. And then I just enjoyed reading it. I just thought it was a great, fun, and interesting read. And I didn't have this like tension hanging over me all the time, which for me is what keeps me from reading things. Mm-hmm. Like I don't like to read things where I feel tense all the time because like I don't read to feel tense. I read to relax.
Uh-huh. Oh, it's like my playlist of music that makes me feel stressed.
Yes.
Yeah. Stressed and anxious. Yeah. And I'm like, I don't want like listening to this music, but I find it fascinating that it exists.
Yeah.
One of the things I wanted to add to the conversation about the loss of self is after I read this, I read a book called Resistance is Futile, The Life and Death and Life of Julie Lalonde. And it's a memoir about a woman who experiences a stalker for 10 years, about until the stalker dies. And there's this experience of the person who I was while I was being stalked is no longer. I no longer have to be that person. And so they're sort of, you know, acknowledging the death of a person that she was before. And it's not quite the same as this person who has experienced a loss of self that is much more, you know, forced, you know, that he had no choice about losing his memory of who he was before he came into the house. But just that acknowledgement of how much a trauma can change a person.
Yeah. For me, I definitely hit a point where things were starting to be revealed about, like, the protagonist's history, and realized that I didn't know what I wanted for him.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was like, do I want him to, like, get all of his memories back? Will that be, like too traumatic to handle? Because, like, at certain points, he, like, does remember a few things, and he finds it overwhelming, like, you know, to go from thinking there are two people alive in the world to, like, having these vague memories of, like, being in London and, like, being surrounded by people are just so overwhelming to him that I was like, God, maybe that will at this point be worse than not remembering. And yeah, like, is he going to stay? Is he going to go back to the other world? Is he going to get a chance to go back to the other world? You know, what's going to happen? I don't actually know what I want. And for me, the thing that really resolved that tension was when we met the character that's referred to as 16, whose name is actually Raphael. And she is a detective, I think. Mm-hmm. She's in some level of law enforcement, but she has been looking into this missing person, who was Matthew Rose Sorensen? Was that the name?
Mm-hmm.
And finds a way into the house dimension, trying to find him. And she, like, her presence for me really brought, like, a sense of I don't know, peace to Piranesi's character, because she arrives and instead of being like, you know, I'm from, you know, where you're really from, and this is your real name, and here's, you know, all of this information about your old life. She is just so, like, fully respectful of his autonomy,
mm-hmm.
and, like, whoever he is now in this moment and his way of seeing the world. And
that's really how you knew it was a fantasy novel, because, like, the police are not like that in real life.
She's a really nice cop, yeah. Yeah, but just the fact that, like, this character is introduced to the narrative who is so, like, affirming and accepting, in contrast to, like, the abuse that the protagonist had gone through, it hit me really hard, and made me really feel like that was a more realistic, you know, for as much as anything in this book can be realistic, but in terms of, like, how to navigate through trauma,
mm-hmm.
was just such a more meaningful resolution to me than if some, you know, he got all of his memories back and fought his way back to the real world, to have this person just say, like, yeah, I totally accept that you're a beloved child of this house, and whatever you want to do, I want to help you do that.
Mm-hmm.
And really put it back in his hands after, you know, years of those choices being taken away from him, spoiler, by the other who had brought him here and kept him here, and was using him.
I don't even know how to go about spoiling this book. I'm like, where do you start?
I will say that, like, one thing I really appreciated about this book was the way that it dealt with the trauma of what he's been through. Made it, to me, it was both more, it was a bigger acknowledgement of trauma than we almost ever get in our lives.
Mm.
We tend to take what are obviously huge traumas, I mean, really genuinely obvious traumas in our lives and just kind of sweep them under. Like, we survived these, you know, like we don't even acknowledge the huge traumas. Nonetheless, ones that are like more subtle, like
the last year and a half of our existence.
Right. So to me, what was interesting about this was that the way that the trauma was dealt with made it more apparent that, yes, this is an incredible trauma. But I think very few books would have actually presented in such a way that you would actually have been able to truly, like, digest the fact mm-hmm. that that was a trauma and how much that would mean to that person. The way that it deals with it at the end, where they don't accept either of their previous identities, essentially. Neither their identity as Matthew Rose Sorensen from before they ended up in the labyrinth world, nor the person that they start referring to as Piranesi, who lived within that labyrinth world, are fully who they are at the end of this trauma, at the end of this event. They are someone else that contains both of those, but is also someone else beyond that. And I think that that is just such a powerful way of helping us to experience and understand these kinds of traumas. I really appreciated that about this book. Like, I just don't think there are many books out there that can make things that are not obvious traumas, like someone died or someone was raped or someone, like, they have to, like, so much of our media goes straight to, like, have the woman be raped. That's an obvious trauma, right?
Yeah.
Duh, they were raped. They were traumatized. Okay, now we can move forward and just have new events happen, as if, like, there is no fallout from that besides stating it was a trauma.
Or they never recover.
Yeah.
And I think even when trauma is depicted in like the sense they're talking about, where it's like a trauma of violence, of like a physical trauma, we don't get a lot of media that deals, not that there's like zero, but I think it is infrequent to see like a really like thorough and sensitive depiction of like the like mental and emotional elements of that.
Yes. The interiority of the trauma.
Yeah.
We see the exteriority of trauma, but we don't tend to see the interiority of it.
Yeah. And for this one, for me, this is like very obviously about an abusive relationship, but it is, you know, not one that involves physical violence. It involves like deception and gaslighting and.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, isolation and removal of autonomy. And seeing the character like reckon with that and get those things back, even if he's like not the same person that he was before, is still so, you know, is still such a I shouldn't say still, is so meaningful to see, you know,
yeah,
a character go through something like that in, you know, this sort of sci-fi fantasy novel. It was not something I was necessarily expecting.
And it's like the relationship between Piranesi and the other is not the only traumatic and abusive relationship within this book. Because when we find out more about this world and about how it was like this dimension was like discovered by this academic and like this academic's cultish followers and the academic's relationships whatever the other people involved with that, like the woman that he had who he's like, you need to cut off connection with your family, or the person that he basically kidnapped and held hostage in the dimension and in his own house, who later returned at the very end of the story, still clearly like decades later dealing with those traumatic events of being held mm-hmm. hostage, and like feeling like your memories were unreliable.
Mm-hmm. After reading the book in preparation for our discussion today, I went to see if there were any book club like
questions
that have been put out there for it. And I found one that I started reading through and it actually like, I was like, this is actively making this book worse for me because these questions so completely like do not understand the point of this book. They're asking about the kinds of things that you get asked in terrible English classes in high school. Like, how does this character compare to this character? Why would they have done this way? Or, like, stuff like that. And I was like, holy crap. No wonder we all come out of our high school English classes hating
books,
literature and books. Like, these are terrible questions. Oh my goodness. There is so much more meaningful stuff to talk about in here than, like, comparing these two characters. Like, just not important.
What I thought was funny was I looked up some discussions after I finished it, and some people were saying how they didn't think the fantasy world existed and that it was all in his head. And I'm just like, that's so boring.
Yeah.
The other dimension is much more interesting. And you are clearly not someone that enjoys reading books about other dimensions.
Yeah.
That to me totally sounds like, I feel like, you know, sort of internet forum culture of being like, oh, what if, you know, cartoon from our childhood was actually all in one character's nightmare or something, where it's like, that feels very clever, but actually you're allowed to just buy into a world where, like, these cartoon things exist, or, you know, in this case, like, just, you know, enjoy a fantasy world. You don't have to create a realistic structure around it. Like, you know, I just don't get that impulse to sort of reduce stories down to, like, but what if actually mental illness?
Yeah.
not alternate dimensions and, you know, statues made out of, like, the energy that flows through us, you know, throughout time or what the fuck ever philosophical explanation is given for why this pocket dimension exists. What if actually nightmare?
Yeah. I mean, I think that is actually also very much related to my sense of, like, these are terrible questions because it reduces it down to these super simplistic readings. Because I think we get trained to be like, how do we solve instead of how do we just exist mm-hmm. with and use and play with these ideas and allow them to be within their own space and frame without being like, must solve for the correct answer.
Right.
Like, we don't need a correct answer and we don't need a comparison answer. We just need to let this thing exist within us and within its own frame of reference and play with those ideas.
However, speaking of that, let's now move on to problems and solutions that we have for this book.
What?
Do you have some?
I had one major, I love this book, but I have one major problem with it. And that it is said that this world, this dimension, and, like, these are the descriptions that the characters are giving for a dimension that they cannot explain. That it is made up and it is the ideas that have slipped out of our reality and created their own dimension, basically. And it has done this by being a weird, spooky house filled with statues of stuff. And there's statues of, like, gorillas and people, and mostly, like,
minotaurs, kings, fauns, women with beehives.
And it seemed like the statuary, like, in my mind was very, like, classical,
mm-hmm.
like European style statuary. And the rooms seemed very in that sense as well. And my frustration was that I'm like, okay, where are the ideas that are not from Europe?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, this world is really interesting and clear, but I'm like, clearly there are multiple entrances to this world, right? Like, there's not just this one way in, and there are ideas from other parts of the world that have slipped out as well. And I'm like, I just wanted something to acknowledge that somehow.
Maybe the entrance that the first occultist academic dude found was just because it's from his own, like, he was thinking about his childhood, right? Or something like that. So it's come out of his own expectations for how a conduit to all the ideas of the world would look like. And if someone else did something similar, maybe they would show up at a different portion of the house and it would look completely different.
But we know that the Piranesi character is mixed race.
Mm-hmm.
And you can say that, like, oh, they were guided to this entrance by someone else, but still.
Yeah.
All I wanted was a line that said, as I went 960 rooms away, the architecture and the statues seemed to subtly change in design, implying that this world changed based on whatever.
That it contained references to ideas and thought that didn't come out of the Western tradition.
Yes.
I will say I am really bad at imagining physical spaces, which I just gave up at a certain point in this book. So I guess this didn't strike me as much because I was like, there are rooms, there's vestibules, there's staircases. I don't know what they look like. That's fine. But
yeah,
the statues. Yeah, I guess I didn't think about like, yeah, I was assuming they were done in a very sort of realistic, you know, sort of marble classical style, which is not the style of statues throughout time and all over the world. So it would make sense for there to be more variety. But I guess I also don't know. Yeah, I think I'd be interested to know what Susanna Clark. I've got her name right.
Yeah.
Yes. What Susanna Clark thinks of that, if she is like, oh, I should have, you know, made it more explicit that, you know, these statues are in different styles, or, you know, I should have, or if she was like, that's a good idea, I didn't think of that. or if she's like, actually, this is the Eurocentric dimension pocket and there's a separate, you know, Oceania.
Like, and honestly, that would be really interesting too. Like, this is the dimension that is originally found and accessed by academics. But the problem with that is that there's the child skeleton, and the child ended up there, I imagine, by just like playing and finding it themselves at some point in the past and ended up lost there and alone and scared and died. But it is like possible that an academic-y person found them and left them there, but I don't know.
That's sad.
It was a bummer. But so that was my one issue with it.
I just had a thought that I did not have while reading. Is it possible that the child was born in that world?
Oh.
That two of the other people who were trapped there, like, lived there long enough to...
Well, didn't he say that he found a lot of the skeletons in the same place? And so that made me wonder as well, like, how was this, like, an expedition? I would love to have a book that is just, like, found documents about this world, and it is like journal entries and news entries and like whatever it is about how people from various points throughout history have found this space.
I've got a pitch for you, Matthew.
Yes.
Which I, in talking to the friend that I recommended this to, who is a game developer, we're talking about how this book would be as a video game, and like we sort of mapped it out. That would be this procedurally generated house. You start in one room. You don't have any memories. You're just walking around. And after you explore like X number of floors, then the patterns of the tides are locked in, and those start coming in and out. And you could walk up to statues and observe them. You've got this very limited inventory. there's a bunch of environmental storytelling via like writing on the walls, and he at one point was like, yeah, I don't know if the plot would really work well for a video game. I was like, are you kidding? You like distract a bird to collect journal scraps? That is so video game.
Well, honestly, it's very video game as well. Like so many video games, you are starting in a world as a protagonist and you don't have the protagonist memories.
Yeah.
But you have like, you know how like the world, like a world works, and then you're just wandering around these spaces. So it is, it can be seen as very video gamey in a way, which is a really kind of strange, because I'm sure Susanna Clark did not be like, oh, I'm going to create a first person shooter novel.
And I've definitely played games where you find your own diary entries.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Like it's like a walking simulator even, you know, like you walk around and you discover journal entries and things, and there's a mystery and you're not really sure what's going on.
Yeah, it's like it's a puzzle sort of game. Did not have a more specific genre to say than that. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, one of the things that I kind of liked about it, I read it more as a mystery than as a horror story, which can still have, you know, some scary elements. And I like that it was kind of that you were kind of puzzling things out. And it, yeah, certainly like finding your own journal scraps and putting a story together feels very video gamey.
Mm-hmm. While we're talking of other media and whether this is a horror story or not, I want to mention two other things, two other pieces of fiction that this book made me think of. And the first is an SCP story that I shared with all of you. SCP being the horror website world, secure, contain, protect, about spooky stuff, items that do not obey our laws of physics and are creepy in some way. And the one in question is about an IKEA that goes on forever. And I sent this link to all of you, and I don't know if any of you actually read it.
I did. No.
And it is just, it's about this guy that walks into an IKEA and gets lost, and it's just like, oh, it just goes on forever. And then it finds other communities and people that live there, and also there's monsters. So it is much more explicitly a horror story. And it is also told through journal entries, I believe, which is kind of a funny thing. So that's one infinite space story. And the other one is Blame, the comic by Tsutomu Nihei, which I reread the first volume of last night in preparation for this, which is about a guy wandering around bizarre architecture that goes on forever, seemingly, and like occasionally encounters people and he asks them questions and they don't even understand what he's talking about. And you don't know what's going on. And people are like, yeah, we don't even know what's in that direction. We have no idea, but there's still clearly like sort of technology and stuff. And you have no idea where the main character came from at the beginning. And he's just the wanderer, you know? So those are two other things. And Blame, I think also really, when you're reading the comic, there are scenes that really bring to mind the art by the original Piranesi artist, who this book is named after, which are those like prints of like bizarre architectural massive structures from the inside that don't really make sense. And I'm sure if we're inspired by like fever dream nightmares or something, I think.
Yes.
It like Blame is like, what if a million people went into the space and then you came back 1,000 years later?
So can I ask a question for you all? Why do you think the main character was written to be so sweet and lovely? They were just a lovely human being. Why were they written to be such a lovely person?
I feel like as a piece of literature, I think it was so that you loved this character and wanted you know, good things for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think insofar as the logic of the story, there was that other character, poor Billy something, who had also like been held hostage and spent several years in the house and, you know, came back and talked about like, you know, this beautiful house and how much he loved it there and seemed to have undergone like a transformation of self similar to what the protagonist experienced. And, I mean, big spoilers at the end, these two characters meet and that like really heartwarmed me. I think, not necessarily the experience of like losing your memory that you know, makes you undergo this transformation. But I think within the logic of the book, it is perhaps something about the house that, like, when, you know, the protagonist says many times, you know, that the house is gosh, what is the line? What is the last line of the book?
The beauty of the house is immeasurable, its kindness infinite.
There's a bunch of capitals there as well.
Yes, that is actually something else we can talk about. But yes.
I think also, Anna, like, if the main character wasn't so agreeable, the plot couldn't have gotten to where it is because the other is such an asshole. Like, and even if you're not, even as readers, we don't know what's going on, but we know the other is an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, we couldn't have the conflict develop as it does if the main character wasn't so optimistic and agreeable and positive.
I mean, does it say something about optimism that we have to forget to a certain extent what has come before in order to support it?
I think it's more like that you have to forget to survive. You have to forget what else existed to have an existence like that. I don't know. That's how I interpreted it.
I don't know, because for me, I was going to mention that the piece of media that I thought of when I finished this book, but only in one very specific way, was Dr. Rosewater, or Mr. Rosewater, which Kurt Vonnegut.
God bless you.
God bless you, Mr. Rosewater. Yes. Thank you. In that, like, the very last line, like, hit me really hard and, like, changed my like whole mood upon finishing that last sentence, because the last sentence is that the beauty of the house is immeasurable and its generosity infinite, something like that. You just said it.
Kindness, but yes.
Kindness is infinite. And the protagonist is saying that line after returning to the real world, and after this last journal entry is just reflecting on some like lovely details of like a walk through a park and then like seeing some lanterns on a patio and observing these details in the real world, which he is now living in, but then finishes those observations of the real world with this statement that the beauty of the house is immeasurable. And for that, he is, you know, not talking about the literal house dimension. He is talking about, like, you know, the whole world as if it is the house, which, you know, his whole world was before. But
I did not interpret it that way.
Oh, okay. No, that is how I saw it, because he is looking at, like, there's kids running by with a flute, and he's like, those remind me of this statue, and he sees this man, and he's like, I know this man. There's a statue of him in the house, and then he sees these lanterns, like, dancing on a line above a patio, and says the beauty of the house is immeasurable, but he's talking about, like, our world.
Oh, yeah. So he's seeing it as, like, an extension of the house.
Yeah, and for me, that was so huge that it is this character that was able to choose if he wanted to live in, like, the real world and all of its complications. And he talks about, you know, how complicated his life is in the real world compared to, like, the house, which was, while, like, very isolated, was in some ways, like, a quote-unquote paradise.
No.
Well, I mean, but for him, for the other character that spent years there, like, mm-hmm. they want to go back, and they feel connected to it. And but yeah, he had the ability to choose if he wanted to live in the world or to, like, keep this simple lifestyle where he doesn't have, you know, all of these memories. And he chose the world, and he kept that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Was the thing that really hit me, that he could have shut the world out and kept this, you know, sort of sweet, innocent, whatever you want to call it, perspective, but he both chose the complications and kept that outlook. Beautiful story.
I clearly interpreted part of this story differently than you did.
Uh-huh.
Where when our main character goes and visits the other person who had spent time in this world, in the house,
mm-hmm.
and offers them the chance to go back, I interpreted that as the other person finally being vindicated that their memories were not false.
Mm, that's true too. Yeah.
It was like saying, oh, no, you're not, those are not false memories.
Yeah.
You know, like, you actually did experience this traumatic event, and it was just someone basically supporting them in that way.
I think my interpretation was a little closer to RJ's, because that person actually did want to stay and asked to be able to stay in that space. Mm-hmm, and also true. Because Raphael wants to keeps visiting that space, even without the person who is no longer Piranesi.
Mm-hmm.
Raphael goes back repeatedly to visit that space specifically, and they describe it specifically because feels like she might find something there that she needs, and that there's a silence to that place that's really important. And I think that is what I think is interesting, is as much as this is a description of an experience of a traumatic event, it's also about a place in which somebody found great strength and peace and purpose during that, and was able to get through this experience through that that strength and peace and purpose within that place that they found for themselves. They found a lot of meaning within that space. It just, in the end, isn't enough because it's alone, because it's isolated. Whereas the other person, I guess, was like so traumatized that they are willing to be alone within that space and want to be alone. They were unable to make that space into a survivable space for themselves. Like they weren't able to feed themselves and survive within that space. They had to have food delivered to them and things like that. The person who was Piranesi could go back to that space and continue to survive and feed themselves and do things in there, but they're choosing not to because they're choosing to re-engage with the wider world.
Maybe it's just like the fact that the idea of living in the house is so horrifying to me.
To you, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah. I don't want to survive on a diet of fish I catch and seaweed.
Yeah.
Please, like, anything but this.
I mean, aside from the fish and the seaweed, it did... One of the things I started thinking about was maybe this was a more positive version of a rest cure. Like, it gives people space to think and, like, that silence and the noise of the tides.
Yeah.
That kind of, like... water cure.
There's so much moral awfulness from a lot of the other characters that access the space, like in terms of who are able to get to that space. Like Raphael, and, no, and the other person who is forcibly brought there, yeah. No. But like so many of the other characters are really morally
terrible.
Terrible.
Bankrupt.
Yeah.
Reasons for wanting to use the house and access the house are also terrible.
Are terrible, yeah. So I think that there is something there about, like, I don't know. I feel like that there is some sort of thing about their relationship to that space in terms of their moral perspective on it that can make it a positive or a negative, a hopeful or a not so hopeful, a strength point or a point of breaking an insanity that some of them clearly went through. I don't know. I don't know exactly, but I agree closer with you, RJ, about what the end meaning felt like for me. It feels both really sad and really powerful and really wonderful, like all at the same time, because it feels a little bit like it's almost like the loss of innocence for that character that was in a lot of ways so innocent for so much of this. But it also feels like such a point of growth for this person too. And it's really interesting to think of this person as being sort of reborn because they had a whole life prior to all of this, but that whole life is gone. That identity is gone. And now they're being reborn into the world as a new person with that previous set of experiences to some degree, but also just like this other set of experiences from the no longer Piranesi, from the Piranesi side of themselves and how they're integrating all of this together.
For such a short book, there's so much to talk about.
Yeah. It is dense, but short.
It's just really well written as well.
I know.
But it's not dense also. Like, it's easy to read.
It's very easy to read, actually. Super fast read, very easy to read, very enjoyable to read. Like, I wholeheartedly recommend this book. I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
I hope if you're at this part of the podcast, you have already read it.
Yes, yes. I hope so, too.
Or honestly, even if you haven't, like, it's worth, even if you now feel you know the entire plot, I think it's worth reading just because the Susanna Clarke is a really good writer,
yeah.
You know? And so, like, the word choices and the way she describes everything is really well done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I totally agree. I think that despite, even if you, as much as it is better to go into this book without having any spoilers, even if you did have it all spoiled, I still think you could get a lot out of reading the book itself. Because the way it's written is actually really interesting. Like, the way that the journal entries are done and how they're labeled and how they are used, that labeling and that structure is used to build the world and build the meaning that this character is given to this world. Like, it's just that, oh, that's one of the things I was going to comment on is Matthew noted that final line has some odd capitalizations in it.
That's something that's throughout the book, isn't
it? It's throughout the whole book, yeah. There's all sorts of capitalizations of words that we wouldn't capitalize, but it's because of how this central character understands their world and the meaning that they place in their world. And I think it's just a very interesting, like, so much about this book is just very interesting, and it's how it's structurally written in that really is a big part of how you come to understand the meaning of the book is by seeing the way it is written. Like, I don't think it would be as good. I think it would be fine as an audiobook, but I don't, I think you would miss things.
Yeah, for sure. Any closing comments?
5 stars. Would recommend.
5 stars. Would recommend. There, I mean, even with as many spoilers as we gave, and we gave quite a few, there's still like lots of great moments.
Oh, yeah.
In this that we haven't talked about. So
totally.
Go read it.
Yep.
Also, 5 stars. Would recommend.
Yep. 5 stars. Would recommend.
We did it. We read a book we all liked.
Yay!
Honestly, discussing a book this in depth is kind of exhausting. I'm glad we don't do this every month.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochist. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Like, rate, subscribe, and leave us a positive review so other people who might like this podcast can find us.
Or if you're leaving a negative review, at least compare me to Judge Dredd again. That was really funny.
For all of our URLs and social media accounts, the 4 in our name is the numeral. You can go to our website at bookclub4m.com, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/bookclub4m, and find us on Twitter and on Instagram at bookclub4m. Our email address is bookclub4m@gmail.com.
On our website, you will find show notes that will provide links to things we mentioned, social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode, and our genre-based book list of titles by authors of color, and also a link to our bookshop.org page shop thing, where you can buy Piranesi.
You can suggest a genre or title for us to read or request a recommendation from us. We have a form that you can fill out on our website. No promises on reading your suggestions, but we will give you a recommendation if you ask for one.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the 1st and 3rd Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, October 5th, when we'll be discussing the genre of erotica.
Then on Tuesday, October 19th, I think we're playing a game, yes?
We're probably playing a game.
A spooky game.
A spooky game.
Can I just comment real quick that, like, I had the realization when you were reading off the section about the 4 in our websites is a numeral that I literally, for a moment, I had the thought of, like, what else would it be? It's the number 4. Of course it's 4. Like, oh, like, you mean not spelled out like F-O-U-R? Or like, and then I was like, oh my God, Anna.
Anna, you were thinking that we named the podcast Book Club, comma, 4 Masochists.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, yeah.
We're 4 masochists.
That's us.
Never considered it that way. 4 but masochists. That is also true, isn't it?
That's exactly it. Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual I almost made it.
I think the fact that you're trying to read this is the problem. You've memorized this.
I know. The problem is that I've memorized it.
Well, I'm going to wait for this car to go by.
Vroom, 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 vroom.
Vroom, vroom, vroom. There's so many cat meows in this one, and I'm sorry.